All right, hey guys, welcome back to the Inner Circle On Air. We have Denver Medical Concierge's Dr. MJ Chambers with us today. Thanks for joining us, MJ.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate being here.
Absolutely. Looking forward to taking a deep dive into your business.
So Denver Medical Concierge is a medical, we do medical, mostly telehealth services. So the kind of the key for us is we didn't want to do, about 70% of medical services can be rendered via a video appointment, just like what we're doing today. And we can actually take care of a lot of basic medical needs. And since the wake of the pandemic, probably about 11% or more of all healthcare providers have left medicine, which is why all over the country, people are seeing before they can get in to see derm or a specialty or get an appointment within a week or so, you know, usually with almost every provider. Now we're seeing 2 to 3 month waits for even primary care. We're seeing waits that are, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 months for specialty services. And even people waiting for surgeries for sometimes 6 or 8 months when they really, before they would be able to get in a week or two for that kind of surgery. And so what we do at Denver Medical Concierge is we actually bridge that gap between the services that you're not able to get into with your primary care provider, or if you don't have a primary care provider.
Wow. That's pretty comprehensive. What are some of the specific niche services that you guys provide?
Some of the specific services that we provide is we do a lot of medication refills. We'll see people for things like in the mental health space, more anxiety and depression. So we have 3 nurse practitioners, an emergency room physician. I do women's health. We also have 2 psychiatric nurse practitioners that can do full medical evaluations and do medication adjustments on pretty much everything related to mental health. Most of us are really geared towards primary care, and all the rest of us are pretty competent in treating really like depression, anxiety, and then things like, you know, a sinus infection. You're visiting Colorado and you need, your asthma is now bothering you because you're not at sea level, you know, so we can get that kind of refill for you.
Yeah.
A cold and flu stuff. I kind of pride ourselves on doing all the easy stuff, but sometimes it gets more complex. We're like, wait a minute. We want to do easy stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's a complicated field.
Yeah.
Well, I have to ask, what took you down this path to launch such a unique, concierge?
Well, it's actually really interesting that I was delivering babies during the pandemic. I've actually participated in over 1,500 births. And then during the pandemic, I actually got sick and had some respiratory issues that kept me from working for several years, actually. About 2 to 3 years, I really, struggled medically. And then when I came back into the, you know, healthcare workspace, I really couldn't, because of the respiratory damage that I have, I really couldn't do the job of delivering babies anymore because it's very, like, physically taxing, right? You're running down the hall to go deliver that baby. You're dealing with women who are, you know, bleeding, resuscitating newborns. So it's a very, like, high energy, high speed job. And so I don't really have the capacity to do that anymore. But what I did is I tried to set up this telehealth. And because people tend to come to visit doctors when they're sick, and if I get a cold or a really bad cold, I can get really sick from it.
Yeah.
And so, I just tried to figure out a way, like, how can I deliver service but not really be patient facing? So I just set up Denver Medical Concierge, and it was honestly for self-preservation alone. And what I found is people are really needing this kind of service. So we serve people in the Medicaid population because they have difficulty accessing services. They have sometimes issues with transportation. We serve people in the mental health space for the same reasons, because it's, you know, they kind of really adopted the telehealth. And, we take care of some elderly patients for the same reason. They have difficulty accessing, getting transportation. Sometimes they have mobilization issues. And then also just like the busy hard-hitting executive we take care of as well, because you know what? They're too busy to go to leave their office, go to the doctor, wait for an hour to be seen and blow a whole half day of work. They would rather just shut their office door and be seen and taken care of and then get back to work in 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's such an array of service. And our businesses kind of mirror each other where I'm in that same space. And I know a lot of folks have difficulties with transportation and Medicaid dollars and funding, and it looks different for everybody. And that's great that you kind of cater to everybody.
Yeah. And it wasn't, you know, like I said, I mean, my initial business plan was purely selfish, but it actually has been kind of amazing to see how many people and how many people it works for.
Yeah.
And so I think, I mean, a lot of people have a lot of distrust of the healthcare system since the pandemic. And it also is really rejuvenating for our providers that work for us and the patients, because I give our providers time to see the patients. And, you know, a lot of times they'll tell us, you know, I have never had a provider who's treated us like this. And wow. The secret sauce is like, we listen to them. And we usually have time. And if we know it's a new appointment or someone that we think is a little bit more medically complex, then we schedule them and we'll schedule them at like the end of our like couple of hours that we're working with our patients. And we just give them the time that they need.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's interesting. The response that you get from people when you treat them with dignity and respect, it's almost like they're surprised these days. Isn't that a shame?
It totally is.
Yeah. It's nice to have that reaction and that response, but at the same time, it's also sad that they're that surprised to be, you know, treated with dignity and respect by you.
For sure. And I think that that's been the whole thing with healthcare is, you know, as healthcare providers, I think a lot of people are like, the whole healthcare system's broken. Like, we don't know how to treat. We actually do. Yeah. We're actually very well-trained. They just don't give us the time.
Right.
So it's the, you know, I describe what we're doing as like healthcare providers, like doctors, we're like the lions bringing in the feed to the hospital. So every patient we see is that's the billable event.
Yeah.
So it's the prescription. It's, you know, we authorize prescriptions. We authorize lab services. We're the ones who say, okay, you know what? You're sick. I'm going to send you over to St. Joe's Hospital. So that doctor or that provider is the one who is bringing in all of, and so we're never involved in the meetings, in the healthcare meetings, because, you know, that doctor's $6,000, $7,000 an hour of billing. Right. So they want us in on the meetings. They need to see patients bringing in the feed.
Yeah. Wow. Well, what took you initially? I'm fascinated by the fact that you were a midwife. I had a cousin that wanted to become a midwife, and I always found that fascinating. And I know a lot of folks that's widely popular right now.
Yes.
Home births. And what took you down that path?
So I have been doing and taking care of women, just all women's health needs for about 26 years. And so that was always my first love. And I think when I became a nurse, I was literally like, I didn't want to be around sick people. I wanted to be around healthy people. And childbirth was kind of the one really healthy population that was in the hospital and around these facilities. And many midwives, there's two distinctions. One is a registered midwife and others are a certified nurse midwife. And I'm a certified nurse midwife. Registered midwives are more apprentice trained, but they're all very, very skilled. They deliver lots of babies. They've been delivering babies long before all of us, including like baby Jesus, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I tell my OB friends. I'm like, hey, you know what? I was like, does it say in the Bible that they called, they didn't call the OBGYN to deliver baby Jesus? Okay. Right. They called the midwife. And then they're like, oh my God, you're right. I was like, so baby Jesus was delivered by a midwife. And so my specific training is I had worked in a hospital. We would do ultrasounds. We would assist on C-sections. You basically do every single thing that an OBGYN would do for the exception of you couldn't be the main pilot on a C-section. You had to have you could be the co-surgeon on a C-section, but everything else we did. And we did that under the direction of an OB as a backup provider for us. But yeah. And the outcomes are really good for midwives because they have this thing in most states where the provider who delivers the baby is the one that gets paid. So everybody else, like, they don't get paid for the service. So you literally, like, you know, we would, like, if we thought the baby would come out, we're like, hey, stand on your head in the corner. Right. Like, and you're going to have a vaginal delivery, like, they would do it, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, we, you know, we do everything, acupuncture, you know, you'd send them to, like, yeah, a guy that can, like, get the baby to turn with Moxa, you know, and yeah, all kinds of stuff. So,
wow. Geez, that's just such a fascinating niche, like, to get into.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so what's the, what is the startup look like for something like Denver Medical Concierge? Like, walk me through that.
So for like the, well, for Denver Medical Concierge, we basically had to, just, you know, like I said, I just started to just talk to people. I'm like, who has patients? And, you know, initially it was really just personal self-preservation. I have three boys. I'm a single mom. I was trying to put food on the table. And I'm like, what is the highest dollar amount thing I can do? What is the most valuable skill I have that mm-hmm. people need? That, yeah. Which was medical services, right?
Yeah.
And so, and I think, yeah, so basically I just kind of started asking around because I didn't have a ton of money for marketing because I was recovering from being sick. And so a lot of, some of the groups, I do actually a lot of B2B services. So I'll go to facilities and talk to them and say, do you have a need for these kind of services? And in many cases, they're like, yes, we do. You know, or most of the time they're like, yes, we absolutely do. How do we get signed up?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I've started to build this, is just with businesses, going to businesses that have had either populations of people, so including like employers that maybe have, you know, one of our contracts is with a trash, like a trash distributor in the Denver area. And they have a lot of guys that are between 45 and 60 and they never miss work. They're never late. They don't like going to the doctor.
Yeah.
And they wait and wait and wait and wait until things get so bad that then it's this big issue. Right. And so we're able to, you know, have them not leave work, but go into the manager's office and, or in an office, shut the door and meet with one of our providers and have them take care of things when it's, you know, not that big of a deal yet.
Yeah. And, well, that's really convenient.
Yeah. So yeah. And a lot of stuff we can handle things. You know, we also can order labs and do a lot of the other stuff. It's just most things, you know, you can handle if you deal with it early, right? Early intervention.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So did you face any adversity in starting that up? I mean, it sounds like you must have, it just didn't come so easily, like pulling it all together. And that's amazing that you're, that you have three boys, you said?
Yeah, three boys. One is, so they're 21 and 18. Both of them are in the Leeds Business School at CU. And then the third one is 13.
Wow.
And so both of the older boys working for my business now.
So, that's amazing. Yeah. Keep it in the family.
Well, and you know, speaking of adversity, I was doing most of the business myself. I had one ER doctor, and then I had gotten really sick about a year ago, last November. And obviously the income just went, you know, cause it was when you have a business and you're the whole business,
yep.
And like, and then you go down, the whole thing goes down. And that kind of happened. And I was like, I need other providers and I need systems and I need to get things set up properly so this business can grow and we could serve the people that we need.
Yeah.
So speaking of adversity, okay, I'd come off of several years of really losing almost all my income, right? And then I'm trying to start this up with like literally two nickels to rub together.
Yeah.
That's why I did the marketing through business to business, where I didn't have money for Google AdWords and stuff. So I was like talking to people like you, like, hey, do you know anybody who needs medical care? Like, do you know groups of people? And it's like, yeah, I know all these people who need medical care and they're not able to get it. I'm like, great. Cause I have providers that need to see patients. Well, so, I think it was last March I was like, okay, I need more help. I hired a personal assistant and two family nurse practitioners, and both my business account and my personal account was overdrawn. And I was just like, literally like, God, show me the way.
Yeah,
right. And right. I was like, okay, but I'm like, I knew we needed providers to see patients, and I can't go to these facilities and say, we can deliver this care unless I have providers that can see them. And I will say my providers have been phenomenal, and I've kind of just went up to them and kind of sold them on the vision. And many of them are like, I literally love this so much. I would actually do this for free. I'm like, I'm never going to make you do that because we're all worth what we're worth. Yeah. But I have to tell you, I'm a startup, and there may be a day where I'm like, if you cash that on Friday, you're going to hate me. If you wait until Tuesday, we got you. And they've just have been really amazing and forgiving. And I've just been really communicative with them about how things are going to work and when everybody's going to get paid. And they've been phenomenal.
So. That's so good. I'm so happy for you. You're doing great things.
Yeah.
That's a huge service. How would a business link up with you? What's the process for that?
So what they can do is they can actually reach out. And right now we're providing services for people only in Colorado. However, since I employ mostly nurse practitioners, all of us are compact. There's this thing called licensing compact, where we are can be licensed in multiple states. So if people are interested, they can reach out to us. If they're a Colorado person, they can go through the website, request an appointment, or call the number that's on the website, and someone will answer the phone, screen them, and see what kind of services they need. If they are in Colorado, we can render those services right away. If we're getting lots of requests from other states, then we will initiate those compact licensing in those states so we can serve those populations.
That's fantastic. But you have been just mostly primarily focused in Colorado because that's where headquarters is.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, that's great. It sounds like you have opportunity to grow.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And, you know, I think one of the things that with other facilities, you know, there's just a medical shortage. And I have a list of providers that want to work with us, you know, that I'm like, okay, I just brought on these. So give me a minute to breathe. Let me try to get, you know, the patient volume for that. And then we'll be adding more. So just because there's so much need.
And it never ends. And so I have the same. We, you know, just to give the audience a little context, MJ and I met through Bedros Kalian at a mastermind in Chino Hills, California. And we shared a little bit with each other about our businesses. And one of my businesses is in the same space as you. Mm-hmm. And I know my startup, I faced a lot of adversity during my startup, and I was kind of in the same boat you were, except no kids. And so, so I gotta applaud you for making it through that. But what were, like, in those tough times, like you just spoke to, having, you were overdrawn in both business and personal account, and you've got your youngest son at home and a lot on your shoulders, and you're trying to build this business and, you know, pull a team together. What were some of the things that you were doing that helped pull through the adversity? Like, what were some of the wellness practices that you turned to outside of prayer? Because I know good and well you were praying.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, I think when I was younger, I would, you know, do things and really be like really stressed. Like if one, you know, you can't pay this bill or you can't do this, like any little thing would just like stress me out so badly. And now I've just learned that, like, you just got to appreciate the journey. Like, my personal assistant, MK, she's amazing. Actually, it's National Redhead Appreciation Day, and her little baby, she started with me when her baby was about 6 weeks old. They're both the cutest gingers. Like, so shout out. But, you know, I kind of talked to her and said, you know, I said, we're going to look back at this like in 6 months and be like, oh my God, remember when remember when we were barely able to do this? Or, you know, remember how when I hired you? And she knows that when I hired her, both accounts were overdrawn and, you know, we're growing way beyond that. And, and I just said, we're going to look back at this in 6 months and be like, that was so amazing. And I feel like while you're working the process, that's actually like almost like the fun of it. It's like a chess match. You're like, okay, 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 these guys I can talk out of pain right now, and I'll pay them next week. And then these guys, we can do this. And
yeah, it's like robbing Peter to pay Paul. I know exactly what you're talking about because my business was completely based on reimbursement. So it was like when I was contracting with the county and setting up, I mean, you have to fund everything. But then when you don't get paid in reimbursement, you know what I mean? When you're dealing with Medicaid dollars and different things like that, it's like, and payroll's coming and your reimbursement's supposed to be like 30 grand, but they're only reimbursing you two and payroll's here. You're like, fuck,
I know. Yeah. So no, it's just been like this massive, just like chess match of like, okay, well this I'll wait. Okay. This we can talk to them. This one we'll take care of this later. Yeah. So I think it's been, actually, like, and I keep, and then I look back, right? Like, how many successful days have you had? It's like, we woke up the next day every time, you know, even if you got sick, you got better. If you ran out of money, guess what? We're still alive. We still have way more resources than 90, you know, most other countries in the world.
Yes. Right?
So we're, you know, we're still like every day we're still winning.
God, I love your perspective right now because, you know, when you're in the startup and you're going through that, nobody knows what it's like but you. And no one will, unless you've been through that, no one could ever relate. And so I was isolated during that time. And I also got sick. I had so much stress just waiting, like hoping. I had multiple things come at me at one time. Like as I was starting up, I was like, God damn, who does this happen to? You know what I mean? It was happening to me and it was just my job to kind of navigate those muddy waters because that's what it is when you start up.
For sure.
But you had that, you have your right hand there that believed in you and believed in your mission. And I had a couple of those folks. I was so blessed to have those folks come my way that were just in it to win it. And they were going to go down with the ship, but the ship was never going to sink. They knew that I would never let the ship sink. And I knew that I knew how to steer the ship. So I was able to get through those times, but I appreciate your perspective. The way that you described it all took me back because, I did. It does shake out just like you explained it. Like you do get better. It all does work out. You know what I mean? Like it just does. I just remember stressing every time I stressed myself out to the point of illness over, you know, things that were huge at the time. But looking back, I'm just, if I could give myself advice now, back then, you know, in the headspace that I'm in now, back then, it would be, trust the process. It's just going to work out because I was mission focused and it sounds like much the same as, but you said, you know, you were kind of focused on what was best for you, but what was best for you is serving others. You know what I mean? So it wasn't as selfish as you might think, you know, because it was mission based.
You know, it's funny that you say that because during, you know, the beginning of the pandemic, I had just gone through a divorce and I was completely isolated, right? Because I was working in the hospital and this was back when we're like, hey, you know what? Like these, like stay away from all healthcare providers. Like we were like lepers, yeah, you know, to society. And so it was like a really lonely process, right? Because I'm usually like a house full with three kids and a husband. And then I had just gotten a divorce and I was doing a lot of like intuitive writing and meditation and stuff. And I had like a very financially costly divorce and a bunch of debt. You know, I kind of started the whole thing off with a bunch of debt. And I was doing some intuitive writing. And I do really believe in God and feel like he's guiding my plan. And I kind of think of myself as like hanging like one finger off of a cliff and having him go, are you ready?
Are you ready?
Because look at what you've done to your life by yourself. Are you ready? Like, and I'm like, Jesus, take the wheel. Like, I can't, like, I've made such a hot mess. I don't even know what to do. Right. And so through that process, I was doing this intuitive writing and I said, I had asked because I had all this debt. I was just like, okay, like I'm having faith in you. I'm doing what you said. Like, here's the thing. And I wrote on there like, God, what do you want me to hear? So at the top of the page, I said, what do you want me to hear? And then you're just kind of in a meditative state writing. And I said, and one of the things I was like, what are we doing with all my debt? Mister, I have a plan for everything, you know, but literally I'm like, what are we doing about all my debt? And it literally wrote, this is like the sentence that it wrote after that. It said, just a plan has already been put in place. Just continue to serve. And so when I did that, I've thought about that and I've been really confident with everything is going to be taken care of, and all of this stuff is part of the master plan. And through that, I've been like, okay, I still have debt. And I'm like, how do I serve more people? So I like love that I've invited. You're my first podcast, by the way. And so I love that I get the opportunity to expand and maybe serve more people as a result of being on this podcast.
Oh, absolutely. I can relate to your story too, because during that process, I went through my own, you know, experience when I was starting up. And I was also, I guess I never called it intuitive writing. I just had a notebook and a pen, and I would just, you know, that's what I called it, just writing my thoughts down. And, but I like intuitive writing. And, I was, oh gosh, my startup was, like love was my religion and nature was my church. So I would go before I had an office space. I had a whole lot of life transition happen at that time. I was splitting from an ex of 15 years and splitting from an employer of 20 years. So all at once, and then other things in the mix too. And it was just, from moving from stability in every aspect of my life to like everything just kind of up in the air was a little unsettling. And so I would just go and, I would go to this park and I would just sit for hours and I would do the whole prayer, you know, just have these conversations and write things down, that intuitive writing that you speak of. And I guess that's what that was at the time. And it was just about trusting the process. And I was mission focused. It was just about service to others. And while your primary focus is to, keep yourself alive and stay in the game, it was also about a bigger picture, because it's much like what you're doing is it's serving such a broad spectrum of individuals. You know, it never ends. Not only are you serving people who need medical services, but you're serving the medical industry also, which it's just global. Something like what you're doing, it could really, expand globally, it sounds like.
I think that I agree that there's like so many healthcare providers that got sick like me, or they were just so burned out from everything that happened. And, you know, like healthcare providers, nurses, we were always like, oh, you know, I love my nurse that took care of me. Like everybody just like loved us. And then all of a sudden during the pandemic, we were like accused of being part of the conspiracy theory. And the human condition can only tolerate so much stress, right? And that's why there's been this mass exodus in healthcare.
Yeah.
And one of my hopes is to bring back some of these healthcare providers in like, we work from home. The business plan is to work from any beach in the world. Like, I'm not going to ever have you miss like a family event. You're not going to be up all night. You're not going to miss your kids' recitals, Christmas parties, holidays. We are just going to take care of patients and we're going to take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
I think that that's like huge, right? And I'm hoping that some more healthcare providers will keep coming and wanting to participate with us so we can serve many more people and they can, take care of themselves while they're doing it.
Absolutely. I think it's interesting to hear for you to share. I'm happy to have you on the podcast today and to share your perspective, because I don't think a lot of people understand the perspective from the practitioner's end of things and what kind of pressure you have on your shoulders too, especially if you're, one of the good ones that that really march to the Hippocratic Oath. And, it's about bedside manner and, dignity and respect and making the patient feel heard and seen and validated. Yeah. That goes a long way for people. And I think that, it's half in any industry, in any business, everything's kind of half and half. There's good and bad, and just have to, you have to have your own vetting process for what that looks like and who you're letting treat you. But that's important, to vet people out. And what are some of the tips you could give to the audience for vetting out a service like yours? Like, what are some good questions for someone to ask when they're signing up with a service like yours?
So I think, just in general, I think there's really good things that they need to be doing with interviewing those providers and finding out how they're delivering care, what, you know, philosophically is happening. And I think, you know, like appointment times. And I think that's why the medical concierge models are expanding so greatly. One, because us healthcare providers are like, I didn't get into this to be, you know, telling my patient bye just when they get to the point where they've been waiting for months to see me to get something addressed. We got into this to actually help and support people and you know, make them healthier.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, the things that they need to be asking is, you know, what is their, like, what are their appointment times? Are people given, and, you know, can they have a longer appointment time if that's something that they need? How do they deal with, you know, if I came to you with 10 different problems, how are we going to address these kinds of things? There's also ways that they can actually look up and get the ratings. I know in childbirth, there's a U.S. News and World Report that rated every hospital in the country by the C-section rate. So if you want to reduce your risk of C-section by over 50%, you can pull that report and get that report on your hospital. And in Denver, the hospitals that are the most popular, the most bougie, the most that have the best reputations are the ones with the highest C-section rates. And the ones that you wouldn't think about are the ones that have a 50% less C-section rate. So I think that, you know, just like we research when we're going to New York or we're going on a big trip and we're researching like everything, we need to do that with our healthcare providers as well.
Absolutely. I hate to do this to you, but could you just repeat everything you said? Because you're somehow your mic got muffled when you were saying everything about the C-section.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's a good one. All right. So, yeah. So there's, I just think that people need to be doing their due diligence and doing research on their providers. And obviously, word of mouth is great, like Google reviews, because people are pretty honest in those kind of reviews. And then also, I was saying that, you know, just like we research going on a trip, if we were going on a trip to Costa Rica or somewhere to New York and where we want to have all of our excursions, we can actually research these healthcare providers. We're spending a lot of money on them, right? You can, so what I was saying is that if you, you can actually research, there's a U.S. News and World report that actually reported on the C-section rate by hospitals in the U.S. And there's also a baby-friendly rating. So if a hospital is baby-friendly, they have better, you know, time with patients, C-section, like lower C-section, more breastfeeding and all of that. But this U.S. News and World reports, they can actually look that up and cut their C-section rate by 50% by just choosing the right hospital to deliver at.
That's so amazing.
In Denver, the hospitals that have the best reputation socially, the that are most bougie, the nicest hospitals, they really are highly recommended. If you talk to anyone on the street, they'd be like, oh yeah, go here or here if you're going to have a baby. Those are the ones that have the, they have the highest C-section rates. And then the hospitals that maybe you wouldn't even think about, they actually have the lowest. So, you know, those are like, it's like, you know, choosing the right husband, right?
Yeah.
The right hospital.
Sure.
And that hospital and their, the way that they practice medicine is different than a hospital who is, you know, and these are large for-profit hospitals, and C-sections pay 4 to 5 times more than a vaginal delivery.
Wow. Now, what about, what's a good vetting process for someone that wants to explore having a midwife for any couple that wants to go that route?
Well, if people, this is something that I can do with anyone in the country, is if someone actually is interested in trying to figure out what kind of provider they want, what kind of birth that they want to have, I'm happy to do a consultation with them and walk them through, just learn about what they want. Some people may want a home birth. If they want a home birth, there's certain things that they have to have a home birth. One, they need to be very healthy, right? Because you get risked out of a home birth, and a home birth is for the lowest risk women that there are. And so if you are committed to having a home birth, you're going to be very committed to being as healthy as you can during your pregnancy. You know, if they want to have a midwife, but they want to have a hospital birth, there's birth centers that are affiliated with hospitals. There's birth centers that are freestanding. Then of course there's hospital births. And depending on what they have going on, I was part of a hospital that had a beautiful setup where we had a birth center that was freestanding but affiliated. We had in-hospital midwives, and then we also had the entire, like, up to perinatology OB-GYNs, like, up to the highest level of care. And we were able to, like, beautifully transition patients back and forth through the process. So even someone who is very, very high risk, they can actually have a midwife birth. We just need to find them, connect them with the hospital has midwives that will co-manage them. And so that's what we would do, is like, we'd have these really, you know, complex diabetics or whatever. And it's like, I'm going to midwife her, and I want the OBGYN or the perinatologist to manage all that insulin and take care of all the really high risk stuff. And then they can still have a midwife birth. And then they would do the med adjustments that we needed during the birth.
My next question is, what does the home setup look like for a couple who's made the decision to have a midwife come and do a home birth with them?
You know, I have a very good friend that we actually met because her patient became my patient. So she was doing a home birth, and then it transitioned. And in Colorado, we have some really nice laws that will support a home birth and support like a transition. So there's like very clear cut criteria for people once they're ruled out of home birth. So let's say they get high blood pressure or diabetes in pregnancy or something, then they do need to go to a hospital setting, and we do a really nice, like, non-stressful transition, or even if labor arrests. But in many cases, the home birth midwives do a phenomenal job of really, you know, working with the patient, building rapport. They do pretty much the same exact prenatal care that we do in the hospital, as I've compared notes, and they're providing those kind of services. They'll get ultrasound services usually from a physician that are an OB that's somewhere in their city. So they'll still get those services. And then they just make a plan, and they really spend a lot of time educating the father about support, how they're going to support the mom during labor, because labor is incredibly painful, right? Yeah, absolutely. And so it is a medical emergency. And less than 150 years ago, it was the number one cause of death for women. And so it's a very serious thing, right? Just because we see women have babies and then 3 days later they're in the carpool line picking up their other kid, it doesn't mean that they didn't go through this, you know, big process. But yeah, so they're just, instead of like when we are delivering in the hospital, we're calling and speaking with the patient when they're starting to go into labor. They're contacting us as they progress. We'll have them come in for monitoring if we notice any risk factors. And it's kind of the same thing there, except for then the midwife actually comes to their home. And really, that's been the traditional way of birth for thousands of years.
Yeah. Right? So yeah. What are some of the safety protocols you have in place when doing a home birth? Just to ease someone's mind, if for any listeners that are considering that option.
Well, so I think that I can only speak with about Colorado, and I don't do home birth. All of my births that I participated in were in hospitals.
Okay, good. That was my next question.
Yeah. So I could actually answer that better. And I think for the home birth piece, I think that there's now laws, and I don't know if they have laws in every state, but they definitely do in Colorado, where we have that seamless transition where the safety things are always like, if their water's been broken, one of the criteria is if their water's been broken for over 24 hours, they usually in Colorado have to be transferred to a hospital because of risk infection. If there's bleeding, if their labor has arrested for a certain amount of time, which means the mom maybe is stuck at 6 centimeters and they've tried the interventions that they have and those interventions aren't getting her to progress, then they need to get transferred to a hospital.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Well, MJ, it sounds like you have your hands full over there in Colorado. Yeah. What are some of the things you're doing right now to balance everything out? What are some of your daily practices as Dr. MJ Chambers? What are you into right now? What are your wellness practices?
You know, well, I try to work out every day. I try to either go to yoga or lift weights, or I go and ride my bike because I'm still trying to expand my lung function. Right? Yeah. So just like every other organ in your body, if you stop using it, then it becomes lazy. And so that's one of the things that can support anybody who's recovering from long COVID or something like that. Getting out and trying to move and forcing your lungs to work is actually so healthy for you. And then the lifting weights is really good for, you know, basically your cardiovascular function as well. So I try to get out and try to do some kind of workout. I usually set my appointments not before 11 a.m. and mainly because either I want to go and work out and put the oxygen mask on myself first thing in the morning and take care of myself. But if I'm having a day where I'm not feeling as well or something, I have a little time to move a little slower. But also if we're working on like a big project, we can like something like this, we have that time free to take care of ourselves and things that are going to move the business forward before we're starting to take care of patients, right? So if I started taking care of patients at 8 a.m, then we're into all their problems and all the things that they're doing. And then we're leaving ourselves for last. And so we really try to schedule these patients later, starting after 11 a.m. And then we have, you know, several hours to maybe work on a grant proposal or work on something for the website or do things that we need to do that's going to continue to bring revenue into the business so we can serve more people.
I love that. Yeah, that's beautiful. Now, what can you probably mirrors, but what can you offer some of the audience or your patients as far as wellness practices?
In terms, so, you know, one of the things that I feel like has kind of dramatically changed my health is, you know, less than a year ago, I had a diagnosis of chronic respiratory failure. Hypoxemic, which means your blood oxygen is super low, really like three dubious diagnoses that like had a life expectancy of less than 5 years. And the thing that I did that made the biggest difference in, you know, because I was compliant with all the medical care is I started doing more functional medicine practices, but really, you know, doing the piece that we never get to in healthcare, which is the education and the anticipatory guidance and the things that. So I think one of my biggest recommendations would be to drink really clean water. You can get reverse osmosis water from your local like natural grocer, Sprouts or Whole Foods.
Yep.
It's 33 cents a gallon and it doesn't have all the lead and toxins in the water. Drink out of glass bottles instead of plastic. Maybe add some Celtic salt to your first 10 ounces of water in the morning, because then you're giving your body the building blocks that it needs to actually serve itself, right? Because every disease is actually really linked to the periodic table of elements. So if you think of iron, anemia is a deficiency in iron. Sodium and potassium, when people are depleted of that, they're dehydrated. That's one of the number one causes of death in the U.S., so when people are like in, you know, we hear this in like people who've drank the night before or whatever, they, you know, they're drinking water the next day and they still have cotton mouth. It's because they peed out all of their electrolytes.
Yep.
So sodium, potassium, right? So adding electrolytes and that Celtic salt has 84 minerals, including 4 different types of magnesium.
I'm going to have to look that up. Celtic salt. Okay.
Like on Amazon, it's like $8.99.
Okay, perfect.
That's like 10 months worth of, and you literally put your first 10 ounces of water in the morning, you put a pinch of it in your water, and you're giving your body tons of minerals that it needs to do all of its normal functions so it functions well.
Yeah.
And so the other thing I would say is get rid of all your seed oils. So if you're cooking with things that only cook with olive oil, avocado oil, coconut oil and use ghee butter. And then that's going to dramatically reduce the inflammation in your body. And I think a lot of our diseases are completely contributed to that.
Absolutely.
And that's what my lung issues were. It was all inflammation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. That's huge. That's great advice for the audience. Thank you for that. And for me too, there were some definitely some good takeaways for me and I use all those oils. So
Great. I'd say the only other thing is if you can eat organic, and I talked to someone who said, hold on, let me turn this off.
Yeah, you're fine.
I was talking to someone about like some of the like how dramatically my health, well, first was so terrible and then got dramatically better. And I have followed the medical recommendations, right? Not all of them, but I do, you
what
know,
you for, can.
Yeah, for the most part, I follow, especially the stuff with like inhalers and stuff that I need. But I've also really tried to lean towards healing my body with food. And so the more foods that I can have that are anti-inflammatory, the more foods that like support different things that were maybe going on in my body, I try to lean on that. And so I was talking to someone about, you know, how I switched everything to completely organic. And they said, you know, organic food is so expensive. I'm like, I lost about $350,000 of income.
Yeah.
Got sick. So that's expensive.
Right.
And when you do add organic, if you can eat mostly organic when possible, the circulating pesticides in your blood by 86% within 3 days. You know, so it's like choosing the organic apple for 50 more cents, you know, or 20 more cents or whatever. So it may be like a difference of like $25 a week.
Yeah. It's worth it in the long run. And I conditioned myself to that years ago just to get on board with doing what's best for my body. And you'll pay in the long run if you just, you know what I mean? And if you invest in yourself versus the other route.
For sure. And it tastes so much better.
It does. It does taste
so much better. Yeah. You could taste, I personally was, I think, accustomed to eating things that had, you know, toxins on it and pesticides. And then when I completely switched, it was like, oh my God, this is so delicious. Same with reverse osmosis water.
Yep.
Like it tastes like the Ritz-Carlton.
It is. It's so good. I learned a lot about reverse osmosis water and I actually have that system set up at my house. So,
me too.
Yep. I think it's definitely worth the investment in that because that's my main source of liquid is water. I love water, but also coffee or green tea, which is water-based, you know.
For sure.
Yeah.
You know, and I think people have, there's so much of drinking sodas and all this other stuff because there's an aversion to that taste of the water because the water has all these, you know, like arsenic, pesticides, like it's insane. And they just Google like, hey, what's the condition of the water in my city? And they'll be shocked to see like the five in Denver, it's arsenic, fluoride.
Yeah.
So, like it's so insane. You're like, arsenic? I'm drinking arsenic?
That's and huge. So I think
the aversion, right? And I think I maybe had that where I would drink a lot of sodas and other things. And when I switched to reverse osmosis water, I mean, I drink literally a gallon a day and my kids do too. So they're like, it's because it tastes so good and your body is like wanting it. It's like the best thing you know, you just don't even want to drink anything
else. It's clean and pure and it tastes mm-hmm. good. It does.
For sure.
Yes. Well, MJ, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you today. What are some of the links? Where can people find you?
So I would say they can look up denvermedicalconcierge.com. And they can find links to getting connected to appointments. We also do medical weight loss. So GLP-1, so like semaglutide and tirzepatide for weight loss. We are also going into doing some bioidentical hormone replacement therapy because we're going to just go next level with my health and next level with everyone else's health around me. That's how we work this.
That's how you roll.
That's how we roll. So every time I get better, I'm going to share it with the world and we're going to all improve, you know,
absolutely.
Get our quality of life back. And then I'm also on social media, under just Call the Midwife or MJ Chambers. But if you find me, if you do Mary Gomez Chambers, I think you could find it. But yeah, just Call the Midwife. You can find me there. That's easy.
Perfect. Well, we're going to put all your links up. And again, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today. And I'm hoping to have you back to share some more valuable information and some of the things that are working for you.
That would be great. And you'll have to try the Celtic salt. I definitely want you to be as healthy as possible.
Absolutely.
So put a pinch of Celtic salt and put it in your water in the morning and we'll see how you feel.
Yeah. After we log off here, I'm definitely going to get on Amazon and order that. You said Amazon. Is that right?
Yeah. Amazon. Yeah. And it's like cheap. So many of the options are like so cheap. It almost makes you mad.
Yeah. That you didn't know sooner. Exactly. That's why I like having conversations like this because people just need resources and people that have already been practicing these things. Yeah.
Totally. And I think of just the water, right? Like how often do we go and we're thirsty, so we go buy a bottled water for $5. Whereas if you bought the little like 1 gallon container for $10, you can just go fill it up for 30 cents.
Yeah, absolutely. 30
cents.
Yeah.
And so, but I think it's like they have a backup plan, because every time I walk into the Whole Foods, they have it way in the back. And then I have to find $40 worth of stuff on the way up. So I think that's the plan. They're like, they're going to give you the gift of life with the water. And then they're like, well, you're at it. Make some good stuff for dinner.
Yes. That's like walking into Costco, which, by the way, I know we talked about not drinking out of plastic bottles, but I do know that the Kirkland brand at Costco is reverse osmosis.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
I didn't know that there was a bottled reverse osmosis, because sometimes you do need to, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, and everything's like moderation, right?
It is. And I am a bottled water drinker because I can't always, you know, sometimes that's what's available. But I do know, I did my research on that, and I did find that the Kirkland brand is reverse osmosis, which was right. Good to know. It's right on the label too.
And I suspect it's probably BPA free.
Right? I believe so.
Yeah. So that's, yeah. And I, you know, obviously we have, sometimes we have to have it, but
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Sometimes when you're in a pinch. Well, MJ, I hope you'll join me again here in the studio, maybe in person sometime. We can get you out to the Metro Detroit area.
Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much for joining me, and we will see you guys next time.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Take care, MJ.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.